for me. I'm not, but my the camera doesn't work for that either. I do that lesson by Zoom, but
I
whatever.
see your camera working now.
Yep, here we go. Okay, so we are here. Charles Moskowitz, thanks for joining me, everyone. Dovid is with me. Dovid and I tend to discuss issues as they intersect between religion and politics, Judaism and Israel. Dovid, it's the day after Yom Kippur. I feel like we're starting a new slate as we enter into the new year. And it's the day when, according to Talmudic legend, God is closest to the earth, and where we have a reckoning and we ask God for forgiveness for all of our multiples of sins, of course, which everyone has because we're human beings. And we'd hope that we can move forward next year and have less of them, if anything. And also, we ask God to forgive our people and forgive all of humanity. So, do you have any reflections on Yom Kippur?
Yeah, I mean, I was speaking with Luke Ford, and he was saying it's pretty common. Like, even though COVID's over, I haven't started going back to synagogue. But I said all the prayers. Like I fasted. I probably spent a good 5 hours going through the prayer book, and like literally all of them. I read through the temple service and the 10 martyrs. And I think it's like E. Michael Jones said, you can't really take a Protestant approach to Judaism. Like you can, like I felt connected to God and even the Jewish people, and the meaning of the holidays. But at the same time, Jewish is a communal religion, minyan, and the certain prayers are supposed to only be said with a quorum. And you might be able to argue that there is no such thing as a Protestant approach towards Judaism, but that's what I've been doing. Since COVID-19, and now things are back open, but I haven't approached it. But I found it pretty meaningful, and I even had some like nightmares and premonitions, like God forbid the judgment could be bad. Like we were talking before that, there's some hint. It is a holiday like a Yom Tov, where we say Shekianu, but it's also a very serious day with fasting. And the prayers make it very clear that we're in the state of limbo where God could choose death. In fact, I think it's specifically the prayers, like you mentioned, like, God forbid, and we'll probably talk about like I called Rizzoli and Diana Ploss, but nothing is more harsh on the Jewish people than our own books and our prayer service. And in terms of the Yom Kippur prayers, there is nothing more harsh on the Jewish people than the Yom Kippur prayers that basically say that the most horrible things could happen to us and we'll deserve it because we know down deep in our heart that even if God causes us to be tortured to death, that we should still thank God. And even like the most famous prayer, Lasana Tokef, and like our martyrs, that even thinking of, like the Holocaust, I'll give some thoughts later when we talk about Rizzoli, is our most revered people are our martyrs. And Yom Kippur is the day where we revere our martyrs. In fact, a central part of the prayer service is the recounting of supposedly the 10 martyrs from Roman times.
Right, exactly. And I guess the idea there is that these were very holy men who were tortured and murdered by the Romans simply because they were Jews, because they were observing their faith and they refused to renounce their observing of their faith. And that it does go to the 6 million martyrs for the Holocaust. And that basically, ultimately, we thank God for whatever time we have on this earth. And we understand that ultimately, the good Lord, God Almighty, is the final arbiter of what happens, whether we live and die, and how we are disposed. So we, if you, in a sense, recognize that, it's a pure belief in God. It's the belief that Abraham had when he brought his son Isaac up to Mount Moriah to sacrifice, because he understood that in the bigger picture, God is God. I mean, this is there's a bigger purpose that we can't possibly know. What I want to get into the Rizzoli thing in a second, but before we do, I just would like to pick up on this theme that we cannot, in a sense, Judaism cannot be a Protestant religion. What do you mean by that? What did Michael Jones mean by that?
He actually said it about you. And I think he said it about you to Rizzoli, actually, in his talk with Rizzoli, where he was mentioning you. And the idea was the good Jew theory, that you could be the good Jew. And so E. Michael Jones was kind of, I guess, talking about the collective, the Jewish revolutionary spirit, or God forbid if he's referring to, what he believes is the guilt for killing Christ, God forbid, or whatever he's preaching, but that you can't be, you can't separate yourself and say, I'm the good Jew. Those are bad Jews who are doing this. And probably he's, generally referring to, say like, well, I don't agree with the ADL. I don't agree with the heads of the Jewish organizations and those levels, to say, well, those people are representative of the Jewish people, and you can't take a Protestant approach to Judaism. It's a communal religion. And if that's what your leaders are doing, that's probably what E. Michael Jones meant by it. I meant by it in a lesser terms, just saying that you could have, and you should have, a personal relationship with God. But Judaism is more about our communal relationship with God than our personal relationship with God. So that's, I meant in the more generic, you can't have a Protestant approach to Judaism, that it has to be the communal approach of the Jewish people, that we're judged as a people. And even if we're judged positively, it was saying that that's E. Michael Jones probably meant it in a more pejorative sense. And I say he did say,
well, I mean, thank you. I mean, send me that. I didn't hear that. But E. Michael Jones believes that all Jews, whether they're good, whether they're bad, whether they're mediocre, doesn't matter. We're all cursed because we're guilty of killing Jesus. And, that's something that obviously as Jews, we reject that. I think most Christians at this stage reject that because it's irrational and it's untrue. Whether or not
we've argued this a bunch of times, that Maimonides seems to own it. They were saying, I don't know if we reject that, to say that, Maimonides.
Well, we reject the idea that we're cursed because
the Besdin did condemn Jesus to death.
Yeah, but even if, well, first of all, the Romans executed Jesus.
That's not what Maimonides says.
He's wrong on the history.
Well,
history is
saying that when you say that, that's
Pontius Pilate. Jesus,
that's the history brought down in the New Testament. I was saying that the fact is not what Maimonides says.
Well, I don't know where Maimonides got that, but the New Testament and all four Gospels, and also historians like Josephus and Philo of Alexandria, both of whom were around at that time, say that the only authority in Judea that had the ability to execute anyone was the Roman dictator, and that was Pontius Pilate. That Jesus was brought before Pilate. Pilate tried him, convicted him, and had him executed within an hour. So,
I'm familiar with that. I'm just making the point. That's not what Maimonides says. And you
were
quoting Maimonides a few minutes ago.
Thank you.
I was saying, like, Maimonides says we own that. And the fact
we have to look at the nuances of what
Maimonides stand by it.
We'll have to look at the nuances of what he said.
But and I accept the possibility that you could say yes.
No, I get the fact that
executed, and we should stand by it.
No, I get the fact that there probably were some Jews at the time who wanted him to be executed because they felt that he was a heretic.
No, but I'm saying that Maimonides is saying that you as a Jew should feel strong to say he was a false prophet.
Yeah, I do feel
and
strong.
He was properly executed. That's what you.
Yeah, that's
what
I do.
Religious Jew should say.
And I do say that.
The Romans. You shouldn't say this. You say,
David, I do say that. He was a heretic. I understand that he was executed for the same reason that the Roman Catholic Church executed Jan Hus and 250 of his followers.
That's not what he says. He was executed
because they were heretics
by our sages.
Yeah, but the thing is that whether they wanted him executed or not, the actual legal power to execute anybody in Judea resided with the Romans. Our sages couldn't execute anybody.
That's disputed history. I'm saying,
it's not disputed. That's a fact. And
you
that
can argue with my mind if you
I
want.
I would argue with him on that one point. Doesn't mean I dismiss everything he said. I don't. But the fact is that your Judeans held were under the complete control of Rome at that time, and that Rome was executing people every day. I mean, constantly there were crucifixions outside the wall of Jerusalem, according to many sources, that were just running all the time. So they executed Jesus. Whether or not rabbis at that time wanted
them
executed,
according to Roman, according to those historical sources, I mean, saying that many rabbis said Jesus didn't even exist. Some, there's multiple, we don't know what happened. There's multiple possible histories. So if you're claiming that this is just a supposition and everything, that's not what Maimonides says.
Maimonides said that rabbis literally executed Jesus.
So the sages executed him according to the law.
So according to the law, which was that Rome was the sole authority to perform executions and to try people.
That's not what Maimonides says. So I'm saying if you're giving,
you know what, David, I don't want to go.
You know what the law was at the time because of.
All right, I don't want to go
of Roman books, because of the New Testament.
That's right, and because of Jewish books,
the Talmud doesn't mention it,
and also because of Jewish books like Josephus and Alexandria of Philo. David, look, I don't want to go. I want to get.
There's not that many texts that.
But whatever texts are there say that the Romans did it. Now, I don't want to go around the merry-go-round again with you on this. But I do insist that you send me the text showing where Maimonides said this so I can put it into the proper context, okay?
Yeah, I'll put it up right now while we're talking.
Okay, good. Put it up on, let me just see. Put it up on Rumble where so everybody can see it. Let me just go to Rumble.
I'll even do a screen.
Are you looking at the Rumble site?
I'll do a screen share.
That going to go on to Rumble?
It should go straight onto this screen.
Now while we're talking.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Put it up on Rumble so I can see it. Now, going back to this Protestant approach, E. Michael Jones, as I said, he takes this Orthodox Christian approach, which is that all Jews are bad, whether they're good or not, because we're guilty of killing Jesus. And we consciously knew, and by the way, I should note that if the Jews were, at the time, the sages literally were guilty of killing Jesus, which they weren't, but let's assume for the sake of argument that they might have advocated it, they didn't do it because they thought that he was God. They didn't do it because they thought he was the Messiah. They did it because they thought he was not God, because he was a heretic.
I put in the chat, I couldn't get the screen share.
I see what you're doing. You need to put it on Rumble, so I can.
I just put in the screen share. I'll let you do it. So it's in the.
All right. I just X'd out by mistake.
It's in the Zoom chat. I'll put it a second time.
Send it again. All right. So I'll copy this and then let me just.
This is from Maimonides.
Okay, Messianic
Laws of Kings, Chapter 11.
Laws. And so where is it? I mean, this is a big article. We can't read this whole thing. On the so show
11:4.
So 11:4. What is it? Show me where the line 11. I don't see what, you know, you'll have to show me.
If you go down to section 4.
Section 4. Okay.
Where if a king will arise from the
house of David, who diligently contemplates the Torah and observes the mitzvah, written law and oral law of David, his ancestors will compel all of Israel to walk in the way of the Torah. Rectify the breaches in its observance and fight the wars of God. If he succeeds in the above, builds a temple in its place and gathers the dispersed of Israel, he will definitely is the Messiah. He will improve the entire world, motivating all nations to serve God together, transform the people. If he did not succeed or was killed, he surely was not the Redeemer as promised by Torah. Rather, he should be considered as all other proper and complete kings of the Davidic dynasty who died. God caused him to arise only in the Tesamay. Jesus of Nazareth, who aspired to be the Messiah, was executed by the court. All right, now what court are they talking about? Was also alluded to in Daniel's prophecy.
The Bezdin. I mean, the word in Hebrew is Bezdin, which means the rabbinic court.
Okay, yeah, but I mean, they're saying that Jesus was executed not by Pontius Pilate, but by the court. I mean, that's interesting.
Maimonides is saying that the punishment for being a false, I mean, it's in the false prophet is death.
Yes, I get
Jesus,
that.
Jesus was the false prophet and was therefore was put to death.
No, I get that, David. I mean
he even says that it was prophesied in the meaning of Daniel, the vulgar sure. among your people
and
shall
the,
exalt
you know,
themselves
as
in
I
an
just
attempt
said,
to fulfill the vision, but they shall stumble.
As I said, I mean, he was a heretic. He made false claims according to Jewish law for the same reason that Jan Hus was and 250 of his followers were burned at the stake by the Catholic Church. They were viewed as heretics. They were viewed as a threat to the authority of the Catholic Church. So I get the fact that they probably, maybe they had a baked in sentence him to death. My point is that the only authority in Judea to actually carry out a death sentence was the Romans. They didn't have the authority to do that. They didn't have the authority. Did they nail him to the cross? I mean, they didn't actually.
Maimonides says he was executed by the court.
Yeah, I see that. But I think that Maimonides probably meant the court probably passed an execution note that may be true. But I don't think he means that they literally executed him. I suppose
I think it's quite clear that Maimonides is saying quite clearly the punishment for being a false prophet is death. And a perfect example of a false prophet being put to death is Jesus.
Right. And certainly a false, the execute, the sent the.
I'm just saying that's your opinion saying that.
No,
that,
my opinion that, is this.
That you should say that. I mean, there's Maimonides' opinion that Jesus was a false prophet and the court sentenced him to death.
Yeah, that, which tells
me it was the right thing to do because the punishment is death.
I agree with that. And I think that a heretic in Jewish law who threatened.
Whether the punishment is upon all the Jewish people or the statements in the New Testament, but Maimonides is giving the example of what does it mean to be a false prophet and a false Messiah. And he says clearly.
And I agree with that. Yes, indeed. I mean, if somebody is a false Messiah, like Jesus was to the Jews or like Jan Hus was to the Catholics, then yeah, the sentence is death. And I also agree that they may have had a court say that give him like a death sentence. That's probably true as well. My point is that with all that said, it was the Roman authorities that actually did the death sentence. It was Pontius Pilate.
That's what the New Testament says.
No, it's also what Josephus says. It's what Alexander of
I mean, but generally, so okay, if you're Orthodox,
and Jew, also it's what
you're
history.
Going to accept Maimonides over any of those sources.
Yeah, but as I said, you can accept Maimonides that a court sentenced him to death. That's possible. I don't
Claire Call saying like, I'm sorry, Christianity is a false religion. Jesus is a false prophet.
So yeah, might have had exactly, good and that's
but he was a false prophet, and our sages put him to death because that's what Moses told us to do.
Well, the thing is, yes, they probably sentenced him. We'll go over it again. In my opinion, he was a false prophet, and that's true. They sentenced him to death, a Beit Din, and that's probably true as well. But
our sages, not they, our sages, our rabbis.
Sages. Exactly. For the same reason Jan Hus was sentenced to death by
the. I don't know the same reason. They're not our sages.
No, but that was the Catholic explanation for basically.
Yeah, but I don't know why you're bringing that up. Because
I'm pointing out that when you have a heretic, you know, it would be like that's why the Rosenbergs were executed.
Yeah, I'm saying we're Jews. States. We're talking Judaism. And
we are talking Judaism, but I'm
the
bringing.
The source of those law is Jewish law.
But I'm only mentioning it to broaden the understanding in that if you have, like in the United States, the Rosenbergs giving Soviet Russia nuclear secrets, they were sentenced and executed. Because they were traitors to the United States. They did things that put.
That's not American, a comparison.
Yes, it is a comparison.
Well, I mean, it's a comparison to the death penalty, but this is specific to the false prophet leading people astray. It's not.
I understand
a traitor
that.
Who
it's a false
to our
prophet.
Enemy.
Who
this is specifically the penalty of being a false messiah.
A false messiah who leads people.
Rosenberg wasn't a false prophet. I don't know if Jan Hus was a false prophet. But
they led their people into direct danger by consorting with their enemies.
No, but that's not what Jesus did.
I think that it is.
That's not comparable because Jesus was not a traitor. He was a false prophet.
Fine.
He was not executed for being a traitor. He was executed, according to Maimonides.
Well, what is a false prophet? Well, what is the crime that a false prophet does, according to Maimonides?
For the leading people astray from the,
thank you.
The laws.
Well, I would argue that the same thing could be said of someone who commits a treasonous act to the point where they lead the country into grave danger, into becoming something other than what it is, to the point where they reach a level. I mean, that's why God destroyed Sodom.
Jesus's crime had nothing to do with conspiring with enemies.
No, it didn't.
To do with telling the Jewish people that he was a prophet, and on his prophecy, it's okay to not follow the Torah anymore.
It's not a matter of conspiring with enemies. That's only the action. It's a matter of...
Saying, according to my mind, it has nothing to do with conspiring with enemies.
I didn't say it did. I repeat myself. It's not a matter of...
prophecy saying that the Jews didn't have to follow the law anymore.
It's not a matter of conspiring with enemies. That's just that's the pro forma element of what I'm talking about. I mean, I don't think Jan Hus conspired with the enemies of the Catholic Church either. It has to do with someone, and I'm using E. Michael Jones's term here, someone who overthrows the logos of a people by their actions, by their message, by their teaching, by their ministry. And as such, it's the same reason why God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. They were overthrowing the basic logos, the morality of mankind, and threatening to destroy mankind. Now, in the case of Jan Hus, his teachings could have destroyed the Catholic Church if they were allowed to continue. In the case of Jesus, his teachings, I suppose, at the time the rabbis deemed, could have destroyed Judaism because it was antithetical to the Jewish order, the Jewish logos.
But you're putting a reason by, I mean, just saying that that's the law. He broke the law.
Yes,
punishment for that's the law. Right. There's not like a because. It's just like, okay.
I'm agreeing with you, David.
But I'm just saying he did a violation of the law in terms of being a false prophet and leading the people astray. The punishment is death, and he was properly executed. There's no,
you can
God created that law and gave us the law, for the same reason
that the Rosenbergs were executed. They violated
the difference because that's a manly
American
court,
law.
Manly law.
Yeah, no, I mean, but it
we
comes
can say
from
that it makes absolutely no sense to us that that's the law, but God it, gave no, it may, law, so look, we followed the law.
It may make no sense to us as Jews. But the fact is that when God gave the Torah and when God created the universe, he gave a general body of law to all of mankind, and that the Catholic Church and the United States derives their system of laws, as did the ancient Greeks, I would suggest, from the revelations at Sinai, because those revelations are true. So, you know, yes, it's not because they violated Jewish law. They violated, in this case, the Rosenbergs' American law. And in the case,
it's not because it's logical or makes sense.
No, but it does make sense to me.
But, I mean, it might make sense and be logical, but I'm saying because that's God's law, and
God's law makes sense. It possibly might have made sense
to follow the false prophet. And that's
no, you know, it would not God have made sense. It would have destroyed Judaism.
Come and does miracles and dreams and says all these wonderful things.
Well, first of all, they didn't believe
tells you
him.
That you don't have to follow the laws of Moses.
Well, Zubit, the reason why they thought he was a false prophet is because they don't believe he was doing those things. They didn't believe him. They believed that he was presenting a set of ideas and a set of actions that were false, in the same way that Jan Hus did and in the same way that the Rosenbergs did. And that, yeah, it's a violation of law.
Giving those comparisons, I'm saying one thing, that the assumption is that he probably was a prophet. He was a false prophet.
He wasn't exactly
a liar. He wasn't a traitor. The presumption is that maybe he did do miracles. Maybe he did predict the future. Maybe he was a prophet, but he was a false prophet because he led us astray. And so it's not just like a liar and a con man that's saying that if a person does miracles,
well, first of all,
just
not
like
a
we were
liar.
Talking about ghosts the other week, the verse says explicitly that it's talking about a miracle worker, and that the
well, look, I
death
think that
for
we,
the false prophet, they have to be a prophet. Not
you know,
just
I think
liar.
That we're I think that we're getting again, we're, and I want to move on to the other part of what Michael Jones said. But before I do, I just want to put try to put a cap on this, because I think we're getting into semantics here. What you have are individuals in all three cases I mentioned here, the case of Jesus, the case of Jan Hus and his 250 followers, and the case of the Rosenbergs, where you have people who had violated the laws of their peoples and of their lands to such an extent And I would add Sodom and Gomorrah to this, to such an extent that it threatened the entire system of order, the entire logos. I mean, in the case of Jan Hus, it could have destroyed Catholicism. In the case of the Rosenbergs, they could have destroyed the United States by giving a nuclear bomb to our enemy. In the case of Sodom and Gomorrah, they could have destroyed the morality of all of mankind. And so they had to be destroyed according to the law that does derive from Sinai. Now, the other part of Michael Jones's comment was that because he claims we killed Jesus literally, and again, I'm not going to go back there and go over this again, because it was the Romans who actually carried out and sentenced him to death and carried out the execution itself, even if the rabbis wanted it, and they probably did. Because of that, 2,000 years later, we are cursed and we carry. And in a sense, I was thinking about this today. The Catholic Church and Christianity in general, they seem to, in order to worship God, in order to understand the miracles of the universe, they seem to need a physical manifestation of God. And in this case, that physical manifestation is Jesus. They believe that there had to have been a man who was on the earth representing God, and what they call like God incarnate, or there's some term for it. And I think for the same reason, particularly the Catholic Church, but all of Christianity, they need to have a satanic group on earth that is incarnate, that is physical, that is made up of people, in order to understand the adversary to God. And they've decided that that group of people is the Jewish people, because they have decided that since we're responsible for killing God, and that we knew we had killed God, because therefore we were satanic. Now, again, I'd note that even if the rabbis did sentence Jesus to death, and you know he was executed by the Romans, but even if they did that, it wasn't because they knew that he was God and they wanted to kill God. It was because they thought that he was not God. They thought he was a false God. And it again, it gets to the same reason why other people are executed. Now, whether or not they are correct in that, that's something that can only be known to the cosmos. I would suggest, and I'll bring this back to the old Jew, the Israeli joke, and I know I've told this before, and that is that when the Messiah is standing at the top of the Mount of Olives, looking down and getting ready to enter into Jerusalem, the Israelis will send out a delegation. They'll put on their polyester leisure suits, or whatever the Israelis are wearing these days, and they will show up, and the head of the delegation, probably be the prime minister, I would guess, will shake his hand and say, "Welcome to our country. Tell me, is this your first visit, or is this a return visit?" And it will be then that we will know whether or not Jesus was the Messiah. But until then, I trust the rabbis, I trust my faith, I trust that Judaism, the covenant between God and the children of Israel, remains. And in Jesus, and I would quote Jesus himself, by the way, who said this in the book of Matthew, and it's also repeated in the books of Acts, that the covenant between God and Moses is forever, as the book of Acts says. And that is purported to have been from Jesus himself. And that I believe that. And I think that that is, you know, an assumption for me. That doesn't mean that Christians, you know, aren't saved. I think they are saved if they want to be saved. It's just simply that it's my contention based upon, not just because Jesus said it, but because I believe it. Anyways, David, that's what I want. Now we'll get into the Risley thing, but
that's, do you want to comment on the Protestant concept that,
yes, the Protestant, I mean,
that there is no good, the fallacy of the good Jew, because you can't be an individual Jew, where communal,
right,
a
right.
Religion.
Well, once again, I mean, Michael Jones says that because all Jews are evil because we killed Jesus. So it's not, you can be good, bad, or indifferent, doesn't matter. 2,000 years later, we are all bad because
the, but even from our perspective, that even if, you know, say that, you know, there is the potentially a good Jew, that it doesn't matter, we're judged as a collective. Then that aspect, I mean, he's wrong about the cause being having anything to do with Jesus, but he is right about the concept
of really.
Individual yeah. Good Jew, because Jews are judged in the collective.
Well, sure. I mean, all people are judged in the collective. The Nazis of Germany was judged in the collective after World War II. It's just,
That's the disagreement with Protestantism. So I'm saying that
right, because Protestantism
this
is
individual
like,
relationship with God is antithetical to Jewish
well,
and
first of all,
Catholic belief.
I don't know if it's antithetical. I mean, I think that
not to
both,
say we don't have an individual, but that on Judgment Day we don't stand alone. We stand as the collective, and even if we stand just individually, we'll still be judged as part of a collective. And that's the
we
note.
Will,
Like,
but
all
David,
the
I think.
sermons on Yom Kippur, if you read the prayers, they're all in the plural.
I get that, but
there's
I
a few inserts that are in the individual,
yeah.
But I heard on
No, I
all
agree.
the sermons that the prayers are all in the plural.
No, but I'm not disagreeing with that, but I would only add, and again, I'm speaking here as someone who is not a Talmudic expert, not a rabbinic person, but I think that what my understanding over the years of reading Jewish texts and reading Jewish prayers is that both things are true to varying degrees. We are judged as a people. That's quite clear. It's clear in the Old Testament that, or in the Bible, the Torah, that when the Jewish people were closer to God, they had great blessings and great success on earth. And then when they fell away from God, they suffered, and there was terrible calamity. So
and historically, even in the Holocaust, that the righteous, if you're going to give like an Orthodox, the righteous are actually more likely to suffer. And even see like rising anti-Semitism, it's the Orthodox Jews that get the brunt of it in the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. God forbid, the majority of the sages, the rabbis perished. Most of the destruction of the temple, calamities, it's actually the righteous that suffered the worst.
Right. I'm not disagreeing with that, although I would like to make a comment on that from a secular standpoint, but putting that aside, the business
even say
of,
we venerate the righteous who
right,
like
we
the
do.
Sages who stayed with the war, like Rabbi Wasserman, a handful of people that I will die with my flock. I mean, the Satmar Rebbe got saved, but there were many sages that actively had the chance to leave Europe and say I'd rather die with my flock.
Oh, no
And
question.
at least in the Hasidic schools, Haredi schools, those were the people we venerated.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a lot of texts coming out of medieval Europe.
And when we get to another point, I'll even say, about the Rizzoli and the evidence.
Well, we'll get to him in a minute.
The people I've seen venerated the most were the people who never questioned God. I was thinking of, question, how many people do I know that actually saw murders? And I'm thinking none of the Holocaust survivors here in my area claim to have seen anyone murdered. In my synagogue, the Holocaust survivors, the kids of Holocaust survivors, most of them don't even know when their parents died, so they celebrate the Yahrzeit on just a given day because they don't know when their parents died.
Right, and there's a history of
and
this.
I think I'm the point is the few of the venerated rabbis that I remember that, God forbid, saw their parents and family killed were venerated, I was told, because they never questioned God. I think of the Bubav rabbi who I studied under, who saw his father killed right in front of him. I think there's even a video of his father being killed right in front of him and a few others. And it was known, like, look at this man. His father was killed right in front of him, and he never once questioned God. And so that
right.
was the point of veneration of what could be more of a reason for a person to be, there is no God. My family was killed in front of me. But, the Bubav Rebbe's family was killed right
because
in front of him.
Because they understand
and
that
he never questioned God.
There's a bigger purpose that we can't know, and that, there's a history of that. I mean, you look at, like, during the Crusades, during medieval times, the Christians were astonished by how many Jews refused to be converted, and they said they'd rather die, and they were killed, and they still did. They went ahead, and they refused.
And that's
also,
what makes it into our prayer service. Like any Jew who's been to Yom Kippur, like those are the people that made it. Those are the people that made it into our Yom Kippur service. We have our Einsteins,
exactly.
And our
that's
great
right. No, I get that.
The martyrs are the ones who made it into our prayer service.
Exactly. And also in more modern times, I'm reading a book by Israeli reporter Maddie Friedman about the Yom Kippur War, which is a really powerful book. I don't have it in front of me, so I don't remember the name. That's about Leonard Cohen traveling in the front as a musician. And it's about
I've seen that new book. Their new book came out about that.
It's excellent. Excellent
that's
book.
That's the older one. That's the new one that just came out, the Canadian musician.
Yes. Excellent book. But the thing that I'm reading it now, because he's going to be speaking at our synagogue, and you know, we're all reading it. It's excellent. But one of the things I'm struck by was how many Jews, including mostly secular Jews, when the sirens went off on Yom Kippur, and I remember it, I'm old enough to remember, and it was horrifying and it was frightening. They crowded the airports to get to Israel, to get to the front, to fight to save Israel, and just did everything they could do to get there, even at their own, and getting killed, they didn't care. They just wanted to, they were compelled by something very profound and very deep that struck Jews all over the world, including, as I say, the most secular Jews, Jews who had never really, they're atheists, and it didn't matter. They were like, they all came together and they fought because they felt like we're all going to be killed unless we stand together and fight, and they did. And it's just an extraordinary story. That's not the main theme in the book, but I'm struck by some of the people that he interviewed and that he talks about in this book, and how these are people whose, their parents were killed in the Holocaust. They had suffered terribly, and yet there they are trying to get to the front to save Israel. They didn't care. And there's something very powerful about that. And I think it goes to this very issue that you talk about, that in spite of whatever suffering may happen, there is a sense of the covenant. There's a sense of a bigger mission that God has for us, that there's a bigger purpose that we can't know and that we can't see. Now, as far as the individual versus the communal connection to God, I think that there's enough to show that both things are pretty much important, that, the individual is the community, that the individual can have a personal relationship with God in the same way that the community can, and that by being a better person, you can raise the community and in a sense fight to make your community better. So I think that they interact with each other, and I think both things are true. Now let's talk about Rizzoli. David, you gave a phone call to Rizzoli, and I know. Yeah, because I'm talking about recently, like this past week.
Saturday night and then Monday during.
Yeah, because he did a show about it, and he criticized you. And did you hear it? I think he sent it to me, actually.
I called in to his show Saturday night, and then they were live, and it was like all four of them. Mm-hmm. And then I saw that he kind of defended me because, like, you're like, God forbid. I mean, Diana wasn't very nice to me. She was just like,
no.
It was funny that she asked me if I believed in coronavirus, which I said I did. And she was just like, "You're a liar, you're a deceiver." She was
Why would you lie about that?
Well, I think she didn't even really want to hear anything that I had
to say. Yeah, but what was her explanation as to what would motivate you to lie about the existence of the coronavirus? I don't get that.
Well, she's kind of like, "Oh, he was stupid. He's probably just another liar." And
yeah, but why would you lie about something like that? What was her rationale?
I think she's a media personality. They had like a Beatles version of the song, Believer, like mm-hmm. the Westboro, maybe it's a Westboro Baptist Church thing. Like, I'm a deceiver.
Especially the Monkees.
No, I mean, I'm a deceiver.
I'm a believer. Yeah.
And by the way, that song, anti-Semitic song.
And by the way, that song was
Baptist Church parody.
Just as a little side note, that song was written by Neil Diamond.
I'm a deceiver.
Yeah. Well, it's actually I'm a believer, but she.
I think the Westboro Baptist Church made a anti-Semitic parody of it. I'm a deceiver. Yeah. So she started singing that, like, I'm a deceiver.
Let's get to the point. First of all, the only thing they did make one reference to me. They said that they found me to be
worse than me.
Yeah, but they thought they didn't say I was sanctimonious. They said that I was.
You were condescending.
Condescending. They may be right about that. I'll accept that. I probably was to them. But my question to you, David, and it's a very serious question that we both need to talk about. Why did you go on with them? I mean, what purpose are we going to have to talk to these people? You know, I heard them.
I mean, you told me, like, I mean, so I saw that
I went on with them once, but why go back?
Yeah, I mean, you told me that she requested to speak to me.
So why
do I saw that they were live.
I didn't tell you to do it, David. I just conveyed the message.
I saw that they were live Saturday night. And
you couldn't resist.
No, I asked them in their chat. I said, I said that.
Yeah, but why?
I said Charles said that you wanted to speak to me.
Oh, don't blame me, David. I didn't. I mean,
I'm saying that's why I put in the.
I was just the messenger.
Because I'm a man of my word, and it's saying that it said that it'd be willing to talk to him. So I messaged in the chat, like, you know, I heard you wanted to speak to me.
Yeah, but David, my question to both of us, not just you, is why do it? Why speak to them? They're like crazy. I mean, I was listening to Rizzoli's comments. First of all, he had the stomach to go over the victims at Auschwitz. He went through this whole mathematical routine where, by the way, he said Auschwitz had something like 20 odd crematoria. I didn't realize that. I actually got more information from him. But he said that he made a mathematical equation saying that the Hungarian Jews were deported to Auschwitz, which he admits. And it was about 350,000 Jews. And that he said, first of all, he estimates that they could not have killed or cremated more than 1,000 bodies a day, which is actually a lot of people. And by the way, the fact that when someone's cremated, the evidence no longer exists, that body is completely destroyed. You can't detect it. It turns into ash. There's no DNA. It's just, so that answers that question. But he then estimates that if it was 1,000 bodies a day, it would have been impossible for them to have executed 350,000 people. Well, I kind of did the math on that. Let
3.5 million. Although they only
no, he's talking about
million,
the he's
they only claimed that a million people were.
He's talking.
I was looking that up. It's only estimated that a million people.
David, he was talking specifically about the Hungarian gathering, which was estimated to be about 350,000 people. Now, I did some of the math on this. Hungary was occupied by Nazi Germany in March of 1944. After the Horthy regime fell, and they were afraid that Hungary was going to go to the Allies. And they put in place their puppet government, the Iron Cross. They started the transports to Auschwitz in, I think it was about a month later, which would have been April of 1944. And they continued those transports right up until the end of the war, which I think was maybe by the time Auschwitz was occupied by the Russians, I think it was probably in March, maybe February or March of 1945. So we're talking about a period of 12 months, generally, maybe a little more, maybe a little less. I could do the actual math and look literally at the number. And within that 12 months, he admitted that 350,000 Jews were transported to Auschwitz from Hungary. Now, if you do the math and you figure that they cremated 1,000 a day, and you look at 12 months and how many days that is, I think it's, I did the math, I don't have it in front of me. It comes to about the cremation of a little bit under 300,000 Jews. Now, one of the things that's missing in the Holocaust deniers is that they insist that the Jews say that all of the Jews were killed in the death camps by gas chambers, which they deny ever happened, but putting that aside. The fact is that they're missing a very basic point here, which is that it has never been claimed that they were all killed by the gas chamber or by whatever the machines the Nazis used. They were also, the difference, which is about 50,000 Jews, people were just shot. People died of typhus. People died of disease. I mean, there's enough witnesses to show that people starved to death. People got sick of, this is an extremely dangerous and unhealthy atmosphere where people were being killed left and right for the tiniest thing, or they just expired. I mean, the amount of disease. So,
you claimed to him when you said, I mean, specifically Anne Frank, that she was killed for being Jewish.
Yes.
And if you're saying, well, she was deported for being Jewish.
Yes.
And she died in the camp. But the saying that she was killed, there's no direct evidence for.
She died of typhus, according to even the anti-Semites.
She wasn't killed for being Jewish. She was deported for being Jewish.
Yeah, and she died because she was
Jewish. She died well in custody.
That's right. But the reason why they picked...
Let me ask you, because I was thinking of this...
No, wait a minute, David.
Do you know any Holocaust...
Wait, you brought this up.
Witness murders.
Let me get to the end, Frank.
Now, I was thinking of that. Like, I've probably met 3,000 Holocaust survivors.
I'm happy for you. Let me...
I only think of a handful, less than 10 of them, that actually witnessed murders.
Let me get to the end, Frank.
And I don't know if you're agreeing with me, because I was thinking,
I'll get to that after I address.
I think I've met over 3,000 Holocaust survivors. I think I've only even heard of 10 of them that actually witnessed murders.
I want to address the Anne Frank thing first, because you brought it up. Anne Frank represents tens, if not hundreds of thousands of Jewish people, children in many cases. She was a teenager, you know, young people, girls, elderly people, who were hunted down, picked up, and sent to the death camps, or sent to a concentration camp. And the only reason that they were hunted down, picked up, and sent there was because they were Jewish. And therefore, if they died under any circumstances, whether it be typhus, whether it be whatever, they count as amongst the numbers of Jews who died in the Holocaust.
According to our count, I mean, that's why he focused. And if
argument.
I agreed with him that if you focus on where the bodies, where the murder weapons, that there's probably only a few hundred thousand bodies and a few hundred thousand cases. So it's saying, but I argued like in court that you could be convicted of murder even without a murder weapon or if it's like a kidnapping.
No, but you're right.
They're saying this person kidnapped the person and we don't know where the body is. We don't know what happened to him.
There's a cremation. There is no bomb.
But I'm saying that factually from his, if he focuses on that, well, where's the body?
Cremated.
Where's the murder weapon?
According to him. The cremation machines were running a thousand bodies a day.
He's correct in that manner that if he insists on a body in a murder weapon.
You can't count a body if it's been cremated. It's been turned into ash. And he says that there were a thousand a day.
There's very few witnesses to the majority of the murders.
All right, but back to Anne Frank. The point that I make, and you say that this is how we see it. I think this is how, I mean, anyone would see it who has a half a bit of reason, was that if Anne Frank had not been Jewish, she would not have been hunted down, picked up, and she would not have died. She died because she was Jewish. That's why she's counted. Now, Dovid had the nerve to say to, I mean, not Dovid, I mean, Rizzoli had the nerve to say to me when I brought this up, that, well, Anne Frank's father was a petty criminal or something. He said that he was involved with some kind of graft. Well, fine. Why weren't all people who were petty criminals in Holland picked up? Why was he picked up? That had nothing to do with it. It was because he was a Jew. This is why, you know, like Edith Stein, this who was sainted by the Catholic Church, was picked up, and she died in Auschwitz along with her sister of probably typhus. It was because she had a Jewish background. She had converted to Catholicism as a young girl. It had nothing to do with anything that these people did. It wasn't because they were communists, or it wasn't because they were capitalists. It wasn't because they were criminals. It was because they were Jews. That's what makes the Holocaust unique. And it was even to the point where they had like a Jewish ancestor.
They're saying they were criminals. We were criminals. Because,
but that wasn't why they were picked up.
Of our citizenship, we were illegally in the country. I mean, it goes to the instrumental versus functional argument, to saying that we were criminals.
You know, it's interesting.
We were stripped of our citizship.
Yeah, you could say that.
According to the law, they had the right to deport us.
Yeah, you know, I suppose that you could declare an entire group of people criminals in your country, even if they had been citizens.
Well, it's like using the word illegal aliens. They're saying they stripped us of citizenship, and it's saying Anne Frank was illegally in the country.
Well, first of all, illegal aliens.
Was a criminal.
Wait a minute.
In that sense.
Wait a minute. First of all, illegal aliens are not citizens of the United States. Anne Frank was a citizen of Holland. The German
Jews, she was illegally in Holland.
Once she was declared to be. But before that, she was a citizen. The point I'm making here is,
I'm saying that she was taken to the camp under the pretense of law. And there was probably.
Exactly. It's an evil law. And unnatural.
And saying she was. The criminality.
Fine. You're right, David.
Being in the country.
You're right, and that's an evil and unnatural law. We could have a law that decides that every person who's 17 years old should be killed. I mean,
that's the logic why most Jews support immigration and open borders.
Well, it's not one thing has nothing to do with the other.
But it does. I'm saying that's why the fact, your argument is why Jews advocates for immigration.
No, that's
Jews
one thing has
advocates to dispose Trump.
Oh, I mean, look,
because
I mean,
it's evil because those policies are evil.
First of all, one thing has nothing to do with the other. I mean, if it did, then why
I don't want to bring morality into it again, because
all right, let's bring a secular question.
Just look at it morally.
This is the let me No, let me, first of all, this is
what I was saying, that you, when you bring morality into it, that's that
morality is in everything.
Morality, why most
morality is in everything. I don't have to bring it in. These, all these questions, everything we talked about has a moral aspect to it. And this is the argument, excuse me, this is the argument that is used by radical Islamists and Hamas and Hezbollah in their attacks on Jewish children in Israel. Well, all Israelis are targets because they are all soldiers, they've declared under their law. They're all occupiers, so they can all be killed. And I would suggest that these kinds of collective laws against an entire group of people are wrong, because when people, you know, we do the concept of citizenship, first of all, is something that has evolved over many, many centuries, if not millennia, going back to Roman times, where people are citizens of a given country, and that a sovereign country has the right to, you know, decide who enters the country as a guest. People don't have a right to enter from country A to country B. I mean, you know, the Jews living in Europe were not entering into Europe. They were not deciding to go there. And even if they did, that doesn't give you the right to have them executed. You know, I don't think anybody's calling for like illegal aliens to be executed. They're simply calling for them to be told to go back home to their country.
Functionalist interpretation, that the goal wasn't to have us executed. The goal was to have us deported. But as the war deteriorated, that we ended up being killed or dying from various causes. But that wasn't the intention. The intention,
all right, that, you know, you could argue that, and you could say that this is where the entire world.
That's the majority of Holocaust scholars.
Yeah, and I agree with that.
Functionalist, and really, it's only some Jews that remain as instrumentalists. But I mean, the majority.
I agree with that position, David.
I'm saying Anne Frank wasn't killed because she was a Jew. She was deported because she was a Jew,
and she died because she was a Jew,
because it was impossible to deport her.
Fine. I understand that.
But even to say that when they took her,
yeah, but the whole
sent her away to the camp, that what did any of those people intend on killing her, and say, well, they all intended just on deporting her.
I agree with that, in that the Evian conference, which was headed by the United States, and I talked about this recently, did decide to seal all countries away from accepting Jewish refugees. These were people who were fleeing for their lives. And there were countries that would have liked to have had them come in, like Brazil and like the Dominican Republic and others. And they were told by these elites, the rulers, the ruling aristocracy, the liberal, you know, types, that they could not have them come in because it would set a bad precedent. So they were forced literally to seal their own borders. The difference here is that the idea that Jews who had been residents of Europe going back centuries, living in these countries that were being occupied by the Nazis, that they would be singled out and deported even, or if not deported, sent to camps. That, again, why are they targeting the Jews for that? That's what's wrong here. You know, we're not, they're like
saying, group conflict. I mean, the answer is obvious. I'm saying it was group conflict.
What do you mean group conflict? The Jews weren't at war with Germany.
Well, I mean, there was an element of group conflict, an element
The Jews as a group
of Jews and Germans that were in conflict, and the conflict led to collective punishment.
Yeah, the Jews were not in conflict with Germany.
Group conflict between Jews and an element of the Germans.
The Jews were not
group conflict in America.
Well, all right. First of all, I reject the premise, because I don't think the Jews were in conflict with Germany. I think they would have been just as happy to.
I didn't say Germany as a totality, but an element of Germans, and those Germans rose to power.
And I don't think
there's group conflict.
And David, I don't think.
And millions.
I do not think that
the Americans are not in power. But should those,
David, I do not.
Should those Americans that are in conflict with Jews rise to power?
David, I do not think. And I would argue that the Jews were not really in conflict with the Nazis. The Nazis were the ones who were in conflict with the Jews. The Jews would have been just as happy to get along. Most Jews, even during the Nazi period, they didn't want to leave Germany. They felt like, yeah, the Nazis are not favorable toward us, but we're going to ride it out. They didn't want to, they were not in conflict with the Nazis. It was the Nazis who created this whole conflict, that they were at war with this particular group of
always people. An element
in the same way that Hezbollah feels they're at war with the Jews. You know, this
saying,
is
okay, the law, there was the emancipation of the Jews and we were given citizenship, and there was always an element of the people that opposed it. There was always a strong element.
That's
of
true. And they eventually came up and took over.
Would you say, are we in conflict as Jews with the anti-Semites of America?
We are, but
are
we
you
willing...
not trying, do you not hope that Diana Ploss is defeated? Are you not in conflict with
her? I don't want to see her in any way have her citizenship compromised. She has a right to believe what she does. She has a right to be, I don't want her censored, actually.
We're unique. That's why I said, why did I speak to them? Because I want to, I'm not in conflict with this man.
Well, I'm not going to aid
Jewish people because, you know, generally,
Dovid, I'm not going to
hate list. And you say, like, no, we are in conflict with that man.
Dovid, it's my right as a citizen and as someone who does broadcasting to not aid them and abet them. And I'm not going to do that. But at the same time,
you aid and abet him. You just talk to him and say,
I think that's aiding and abetting.
I could agree to disagree.
Yeah, but the question is whether them. By giving them
that's
time.
That's like Michael Jones said. They said, well, no, I mean, the Jews collectively, we are in conflict with these people.
Dovid, to give them my time would be, I think you could argue I'm aiding and abetting them. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to contribute to what they're doing. But I support their right to do what they do. I don't, you know, as long as they are not, you know.
You support her right to run for governor. And should she
win, I do.
She would choose to have us, she would use the force of the law to have us deported.
I support her right to run for governor. If
on the platform of, you know, God forbid, kicking us out.
Yeah, but she couldn't do that because it would be against our conventional laws, because we have rights as citizens in this country out of the Constitution. That's
well,
why
they're the same in Nazi Germany. But I'm saying once
they changed the Constitution. I support our Constitution, which gives equal rights to all citizens. You can't, you know, somebody from the Ku Klux Klan could become president. That doesn't give them the right to kick Black people out or to in any way, you know,
was going back to the
molest Black people.
It arose.
But they have a right to exist.
And if her platform is basically anti-Semitism, and you're saying that the Nazi platform, the essential platform was anti-Semitism, and you know, so there is group conflict. There might be a minority of the people were in conflict, but the, you know, like if they rise to power on the platform of anti-Semitism. You know, that's how the cycle.
Even Germany.
That's why. You know, I take it. You know, that's why I'm concerned about group conflict.
So am I. But even Germany had a constitution. The United States has the first constitution, but the problem is that after being in power for a couple of weeks, Hitler found a means, like an excuse, like a false flag event, the Reichstag fire, to suspend the constitution. And at that point, everybody in Germany lost their rights, and the Germans could have decided to liquidate any group of people they wanted. The point is that I'm a constitutionalist in the United States. If somebody comes to power who's a member of the Klan, just like everyone else, they have to operate under the Constitution. They can't, therefore, you know, we can have somebody come to power who wants to have everybody be nude. Doesn't mean that, you know, they can do it. I mean, They have to answer to state legislators. They have to answer.
Yeah, but it's like anti-Semitism is popular. Like 10-20% of America are anti-Semitic. And the same thing, like you could make a comparison, like people knew, but saying like, no, that fact is that if someone ran for power on the platform of deporting the Jews, that probably 10% of Americans would support that.
Deporting them to where?
Saying,
I mean,
saying what happened in Nazi Germany.
Yeah, but
the latent anti-Semitism, and someone anti-Semitism gets into power, that's what happened in Nazi Germany.
Under the U.S. Constitution, you can't deport an American citizen who was born here.
Yeah,
where would you deport them
to? They'd have to change it from within. But
they'd have to overthrow the Constitution, which I'm against.
Diana Ploss's platform, and I'm saying if you have the rise of
her platform,
anti-Semitism is a central pillar of their political platform.
Dovid, if her platform is to remove citizenship from Jews and then send them somewhere, then that's an insurrection. That's against the Constitution. That's no different.
Yeah, but saying as Jews, that is saying these things are well polled, and I'm sure you know, every Jew is a little bit scared at night because
I'm scared of that.
And 10-20% of the population
I agree
probably doesn't like us enough that they would support our deportation.
I am scared. Well, first of all, I don't know.
We know we have the Constitution.
Where would they send us to, Israel? I mean,
that 10% of Americans would probably support our deportation.
Right. And but the point is that is an insurrection, because you would have to overthrow the Constitution to do that. The Constitution protects American citizens, especially naturally born American citizens. Would they deport Italians? I mean, you can't just do that, even if you're elected. You'd have to suspend. And yes, I'm worried the Constitution could be.
Yeah, but I was saying anti-Semitism is extremely popular. That's, I was thinking Netanyahu, God forbid. Maybe he had a heart attack. It's unclear. Like he was taken to the hospital. They say he's fine and ran. And I was thinking, like, Netanyahu's not so much on the news. I saw him on Fox News and they just gave him a minor interview. And he was still saying, like, the Iran, like you know, really, it's you guys. You're the big state and we're the small state. And the reason they hate Israel is because they hate America. And I think we've seen with the rise of anti-Semitism, like, no, actually, God forbid, it's us as Jews they hate, like, with the rise in anti-Semitism and what's happening in Europe, that Iran doesn't, you know, Netanyahu's thing, like, oh, we're the big state, and is it's actually they're anti-Semitic. They think that Jews control America, and they don't hate Americans as the big Satan. They hate America because they believe as America is ran by Jews. And you're saying, but no, anti-Semitism is a real thing. Like I mean, there's
of course it is.
There's all types of hatred, but the lesson of the Holocaust is applicable to everybody. But saying, like, no, if it's going to happen again, it's most likely to happen to us. You might think like,
I don't disagree with that.
Another minority, but
why are you talking to Risley?
It's going to happen to us.
Then why are you talking to Joe Risley? But David,
I want to prevent that.
Look, all right, well, fine.
Because I wanted to speak to him.
Well, the question is whether or not that whose interest is that serving?
What's going on in his mind?
You know what's going on in his mind, and the question is who is helping who there? I don't know. He certainly spoke very fondly of you.
I just spoke to him. I just think like. I mean, I spoke to him offline. Like I called in.
Yeah, and he then did a show basically paraphrasing what you had said and what he said.
Well, I called in the show and like Diana, I mean, it's kind of just making fun of me. And he somewhat defended me and was like, oh, David's a nice guy. Like, and so I called
him. Which worries me. Why would he think he's such a nice guy? I would rather he doesn't think we're nice guys.
But I am a nice guy. That even anti-Semitic.
Yeah, but that's nice what that really tells me is that you were saying stuff he liked. But
no, I'm polite and mannered, and he's a 70.
No, he doesn't care about that.
My elders.
He felt that you had
even
helped
the elders
him.
Of my enemies.
No, but that's not what he was coming. That's not why.
I was in their chat, and they were talking like, "Is he too vulgar?" And I was pointing out that the Germans were generally polite, and even in the concentration camp, generally. The Germans that killed us were generally polite. They were that was their nature. You know, like
I know you're a big fan of being polite, right?
Well, I am. And I'm saying that I am a nice guy, and even my enemies, I would treat.
Yeah, but I don't think that they would say that about you.
I mean, even if someone I killed.
So, but I worry about whether or not they would have said that about you, I would worry about whether them saying that about you if you hadn't. If they didn't feel that they had gotten the best of you, that's all. And now
I say two things. One thing, I mean, this was offline. Like he just wanted to convince me that, but he thought the Holocaust wasn't true. So I mentioned to him, I mean, one thing, I don't think it matters whether he believes the Holocaust happened or not. I don't think it matters. I don't really see, the Dara Horn, generally said that Holocaust education has been a failure and it's possibly been linked to increase in anti-Semitism, that the lessons of the Holocaust are for us Jews, it's not for non-Jews. And then also thinking about the Holocaust is set up in a way where the majority of the evidence was destroyed and doesn't exist, and it's based largely upon testimony. So it's very difficult, besides the fact that like I'm pretty sure it happened, like God forbid, I've met thousands of Holocaust survivors, I've lived in Borough Park in Israel, I've seen the map. I know what Jewish Europe looked like before the war. But, if you just spoken, well, where's the murder weapons? Where's the bodies?
These crematoria he was talking about.
Well, you have to explain, well, the bodies don't exist.
Yeah, they were incinerated.
And so it's set up in a way.
I mean, you listen to their rhetoric and they answer their own questions. But, David, we're reaching toward the end of the show here. We've been on for well over an hour.
But I mean, so I wanted to just, say that I spoke to him to say that.
Well, I just mean, wonder
he,
if it's,
he kind of was like giving me advice. Like he was,
you know, Dovid, I just
said, you just listen to what they told you.
Yeah.
And he said, that's, I mean, he was
when
like,
I listen to this stuff.
So I mean, he kept, I mean, he basically yelled at me and he was like, that's the reason they hate you. And he was kind of like giving me advice.
Well, basically in a nutshell, what was his claim that, as to why they hate us?
Because we made up the fraud of the Holocaust.
Fine. Which is absurd. But anyway,
I mean, but that he was kind of like, I mean, in a yeah. certain way,
and,
like,
and when
like
you scratch the surface,
trying to.
Yeah. And Dovid, I don't think he's giving advice. And, you know, because like, if you scratch really the surface and you take away the Holocaust, they've got another excuse. You listen to Ploss. She says it's because we killed Jesus. They say because we rule the world, all that crap. But
I think he's an atheist. I think that woman, Diana, like actually, I think
they all have their excuse for being anti-Semitic. Same thing with people on the left who are anti-Israel. They're like at Berkeley, where they now have banned Jews from legal societies at Berkeley, at University of California.
I think if I called him right now, he would talk to me.
Oh, I'm sure.
I mean, in the sense, like, what does it mean? Like,
that I don't doubt. David, listen, we're wrapping it sort of toward the end here.
Not even like live to promote his audience.
No, he'd do it any forum you'd like. David, I just want to wrap it up here. First of all, the business of people immigrating into a country is not comparable to the Holocaust.
I already mentioned, God forbid, like someone was trying to get me on Cozy. And like, you know, God forbid, I'm saying just talking to goalies that doesn't have a lot of reach or talking to.
Is that an anti-Semitic station or something? What is this?
Well, I mean, it's the Nick Fuentes station.
Oh, all right. Anyway, David, look, I want to wrap it up. First of all, I would suggest that the idea of people illegally immigrating into a country is not comparable to the Holocaust or to taking away citizens' rights. Secondly, and the other point I wanted to make, which is now escaping me. anyways, I just wanted to make that point. I don't know. I mean, look,
The reason we ended up talking to this guy Rizzoli is because you were talking to E. Michael Jones. So you're putting, why are you talking to Rizzoli? And saying, well, the only reason I talked to Rizzoli.
All right, don't you want to blame me for E. Michael Jones? E. Michael Jones is a legitimate scholar, and you know, although he does skirt the border, and
I don't think there's anything that Ploss.
I don't think there's anything that Ploss doesn't say. But maybe so, but he's at least intelligent about
your claim that he would defend you.
No, I don't think
you're claiming that E. Michael Jones would take your side.
No, he wouldn't.
Against.
I don't think he'd take my side on anything, and I never said that.
But I'm saying, why did I end up speaking to Rizzoli? It was because you were speaking to E. Michael Jones.
Yeah, but there's a difference. One of them has class, the other one doesn't. And maybe I shouldn't talk to Jones. I do feel
one of them's educated, one of them's well-spoken, one of them's an author.
And one of them is ignorant and crude. Look, I do have conscience about it. Every time I've talked to him, I feel like this is the last time. And one of the reasons I still do talk to Jones is because he wrote several very amazing books before he got onto his anti-Jewish thing. He wasn't always doing that. And they had a big impact on me. They were great books. His books, his culture criticisms, Degenerate Moderns, for example, is a great book. Libido Dominandi is a great book. I read those very carefully. And I remembered I used to interview him years ago before the internet when I had a radio show, and he was excellent as a guest. And then I kind of forgot. Yeah, I got out of radio. I got busy with my business. I got busy with bringing up my family. And then I got back into it, I don't know, around 2012, around that time, maybe. And I thought, hey, I'll look him up and see what he's up to. And I was horrified to find him into all this Jewish stuff. But
ironically, he says it was Luke Ford. And like, I don't know if you ever heard, I think it's Goldberg, the famous quote about Jesus and being Jewish and why he did the porn. And he, I forget the, you know, like the porn king of San Bernardino Valley, and then his quote about hating Christians and going into porn, you know, to show his hatred towards Christians.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I'm just back to my
saying that quote comes from Luke Ford and his porn journalism. So it was actually, I mean, Luke Ford's obviously an Orthodox Jew and pro-Jewish, but he was blogging about the porn industry, and he interviewed a lot of pornographers, and a lot of them were Jewish, and he asked them questions about Judaism and Christianity. And E. Michael Jones said it was Luke Ford's work about pornography that turned him into an anti-Semite.
Okay, fine. I didn't realize.
And that he didn't know the extent of involvement in pornography
until
he read Luke Ford's expose. And Luke Ford didn't do an expose on Jews. He just did an expose on pornography and asked people, about their upbringing. And he asked them pointed questions of a lot of Jews involved, of their feelings on Christianity. And some of them, made these horrible
and
statements.
And so because of that, E. Michael Jones became an anti-Semite?
That's from what I understand.
I mean, I heard him say the reason he did was
Luke Ford was blogging about pornography.
Okay, you've said it already. Once is enough.
This could have been 25 years ago.
You know, I heard Michael Jones himself.
This could have been 25 years ago.
I heard Jones himself say that what made him become anti-Jewish, and he denies that it's anti-Semitic. I would say it is, but was his disgust over the so-called neocons and they're getting the United States into the Iraq War. He says people like Wolfowitz and, some of those guys who had been formerly were Trotskyites.
That could be also. He says both.
That's what he says.
They would have been about the same time.
Right. But again, you know, he comes at this from the argument that all Jews are evil, and thus he can handpick and cherry pick some Jews who are evil and say this, hold them up and say this is the Jewish people. That in itself is anti-Semitic because, first of all, most Jews do not support pornography. Most Jews did not support war. And Judaism itself does not support either of these things per se, certainly not pornography. As far as war goes, maybe they might have the similar doctrine that St. Thomas Aquinas had, which is that there is such a thing as a just war. But that also he fails to mention that there are plenty of Christians who are involved with warmongering in that time. I'd mentioned Dick Cheney, for example, and there are plenty of Christian pornographers. Hugh Hefner, son of a minister, Bob Guccione, the publisher of Penthouse, wanted to be a Catholic priest as a young man. So, you know, I mean, whenever I say that to Michael Jones, though, he always says, we have like a little game of poker. He's like, I'll see your Jew and I'll raise you two Christians. But the fact is that he wants to blame the Jews for these things because he believes we're cursed. And it's irrational and it's wrong and it's immoral, in my opinion. Anyway, David, what do you have coming up on your show?
Well, nothing. It's the sukkah holiday.
Are you building a sukkah this year? Are you going to any sukkahs?
No, I've ordered
a lulav and an esrog.
Yeah, a lulav and an esrog. I'm not building my own sukkah. I wish I was a better Jew and had, but
I understand. I mean,
I'll make it to synagogue and use the synagogue one.
Yeah, I mean, me and my family this year actually are building a sukkah. We haven't in many years. We usually go to the synagogue, but we actually are, and we're going to be inviting people. So it's going to be a lot of work, and it's going to be fun. It'll be interesting.
Oh yeah, great for you. So yeah, and so no, I don't. I've been talking with Luke Ford some, and I don't think, I mean, I called Risley and like, so I asked him, is like, you know, I mean, I don't think I'm going to speak to him. It's like, I mean, really.
No, I get the temptation. I mean, I
was to convince me that the gas chambers weren't true. So it was like, you know, it was like, so what, you know, I called him, it's like, so what do you want? And then he just went straight into the gas chambers. And, I don't think I could change his mind. You know,
no, you couldn't because in a way, he's a lot like E. Michael Jones. Everything this goes through this sieve of anti-Semitism, no matter what it is. I mean, and he lies. As I told you last time, I don't want to get into it again. I gave you my illustration of where he flat out lied.
Yeah, I mean, he accused me and all, you know, basically.
And he lied about America killing millions of Germans after the war. That was a lie. And he admitted it in the same sentence, which reminds me of a lot of people on the far left I've interviewed over the years who are willing to lie because they're ideologues and because they sift everything through this prism. Anyway, David, good.
It's streaming's tough. And it's like, there's an appetite for Jew versus anti-Jew debates.
And it's like, I have to tell you,
I'm on the list and even say,
Well, that's because you're seen as somebody who might be a good person to have on that subject.
Well, I've just done in the past. So if there's a
I'm
name
tempted to do it.
of
They want me to come back. I mean, I get the
I mean, they probably
temptation.
invite you because there's not many Jews who do it.
That's
Uh,
true.
so, so
And
I
they
mean,
love
God
to
forbid,
do it.
there's a lot of people out there that want to argue against Jews and Judaism on
I know,
Disney
and
videos
I feel
and are
tempted to
looking
do it.
for someone to defend the Jewish position, but
Yeah,
because
and I
they've
feel
all been
tempted to do it, but
deplatformed,
the
well, because
question
they've all
is,
been deplatformed, their hostile environments where
no,
basically
they were
everyone
hostile
has
anyway,
been
but
is
Dovid,
anti-Jewish. But I think it's unfortunate because I do frequently get counter-Semites who want to debate me on Judaism and
right,
stuff
and
like
I
that.
also do as well, and I'm tempted to do it, but at the same time, I'm of many minds on the subject. I feel like I might be feeding into their thing because they're
I
not
mean,
going
I've
to.
done in the past, and I said,
Like
like,
I've interviewed
my
people.
audience was built on people that took my side in the debate. And when
I
I was
understand.
back
And
on
years ago, I
YouTube,
used to interview people on the far left. They
even
won't
E.
come on
Michael
with me
Jones, like,
anymore.
I talked to E. Michael Jones on, a Christian channel, and I think it was like half the audience took my side, and I gained hundreds of subs, and even Adam Green, like Rizzoli, there wasn't a single person in the chat was like that was taking my
Right.
side.
No, and I
And it's the
also,
nature of deplatforming. These guys are on
in full
venues. If it was on a
disclosure, I've
neutral
also
platform
gained.
like the Donahue Show, where
Yeah.
the majority of people, but
And I would say, in full disclosure, I've also gained a lot of subs and hits whenever I have Michael Jones. Anyway, Tobin,
people like E.
I'll talk.
Michael Jones, but thinks he's wrong about the Jews. But I don't think there's people who watch Rizzoli who think he's
No.
wrong about the Jews.
And I also, it's because I actually do respect E. Michael Jones
I mean,
that I
like you
try.
said, probably half the people who like watching Michael Jones like him, but think he's wrong about the Jews,
I agree. And a lot
or at
of
least
people,
wrong in
and no, and I've
certain
heard him.
extent.
But one of the things that particularly bothers me about what he does is that he goes on these programs in other countries. He was on, I heard him on with a guy from Croatia. I heard him on with a guy from Brazil. And he brings
I mean,
up this.
Iranian TV. I mean, I think he
Well,
was.
that's
I'm
another
not sure if
story.
he was
But
at the Holocaust conference, but
I'm talking about, yeah, I know
Kevin Barrett did. Some of
he
those people
actually
were
went to
actually at the Holocaust
Tehran
conference
where
in
he's playing
Iran.
footsie with the Ayatollahs. I'm not talking
He's a
about
regular
that.
on Iranian
I'm talking
TV.
about some of these other programs where he goes on and he starts talking about the Jews. And I can tell from watching it and listening to it that the guests either really don't agree with him, but they don't want to say anything. And that really bothers me. I find that to make my skin crawl. Anyway, Dermot, I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, yes, have a great holiday. Hopefully see you
Same to
next
you.
Thursday.
All right.